Hey now, back again with some UFC predictions. It's an okay card, you know, for an Apex card. We've been inundated with these kind of cards, maybe a bit underwhelming at times, but this one is actually solid. We honestly lost some great fights. Davy Grant versus Cody Gibson would have been a wild fight. Even Chris Barnett was on this card, so lost a lot of fun fights, but either way, still a fight card. Let me address the late notice fights, because some guys are taking this on late notice, short notice, whatever you want to call it. So Mick Parkin stepping up on short notice to take on Muhammad Usman. These short notice fights are interesting because we really do see just if the guy isn't just completely out-leveled out there. I mean, the short notice really does matter. So it'll be interesting to see. We'll see where Mick Parkin is at taking this fight on short notice. Yusuf Zalal taking this fight on short notice versus Billy Quarantillo. Edmund Shahbazyan is fighting AJ Dobson. Dobson's the one taking this fight on short notice. Junior Toff also taking his fight on short notice. And that's around it. But it's important to notice those things. The odds don't completely favor short notice fights, but they definitely do consider it in some angles, I think. It also adds to the depth of the fight. It adds to the complexity of it. Last week, Grigori, the Greek guy, he got smashed by Anheliger. Anheliger took that fight on short notice, but we're seeing that cage time experience. It matters more. So it's really just weighing some things out. Because Grigori was actually doing quite well, and then with the wrestling at least, and then he just completely gassed out pretty much after the first round. So, all right, let's start from the bottom up. Muhammad Usman versus Mick Parkin. Mick Parkin taking the fight on short notice. This is a pretty even fight in terms of odds, at least where they opened. I consider more so where the fight opens in terms of odds as opposed to where people bet it, because the public is going to do what the public does, and I'm not too concerned with that. What I'm concerned with is where the odds makers opened it, where Vegas opened it, where they think is, what they think is going on with it. So that's what I'm concerned with. So Muhammad Usman, you know, this guy is an interesting product. Mick Parkin, he's never really lost in his amateur or professional career. It's hard to pick against a guy like that. How do you pick against a guy who has just completely dominated everyone he's fought? And I mean, he's maybe seemed a bit underwhelming at times, but a guy like Jamal Pogues just isn't going to engage you at the range you need to look good. I thought that Parkin looked a lot more active in his last fight, which was good to see, just incorporating that BJJ black belt. Muhammad Usman, I don't know what to make of this guy. You know, I don't really trust his gas tank. It seems like his volume is actually pretty solid for what it is, even though at times it looks like he's gassed out there. I mean, if Usman was taking this fight on short notice, then it would be an easy lean to Parkin. I think I'm still leaning Parkin just because his volume he'll probably outpace Usman. It seemed like Collier was doing a fine and dandy job of outlanding Usman in the first round, and then he just completely gassed out. But Mick Parkin, he's not as war-torn as Collier was. He's also a natural heavyweight, training with Aspinall. This is a tough one, though. You know, Mick Parkin is taking the fight on short notice, so if he does give up a round or two to Usman, I mean, it's very plausible he could give up a round or two just with the wrestling alone, because the only guy to take Parkin down so far, like in the octagon at least, was the Eduardo Neves guy, but that was just a wild fight, wild exchanges. Parkin was trying to land big shots on Neves because Neves was really trying to kill him in there. So I don't know. We still don't know how good Parkin's counter wrestling is, so we're going to have to see that. I wouldn't really even hate like betting on Usman straight up, maybe even waiting for live odds, seeing where that goes. But man, there's no real value either way. If you're going to bet Usman straight up, then do it. But I'm going to take Parkin. It's, you know, the guy's just never lost. I've seen Usman visibly gas, although the numbers aren't terrible. Like, he's able to actually put up solid numbers. If he's not getting takedowns in control time, he's going to land his strikes. He's got a solid jab. He's a strong guy. I think Parkin's obviously smoother on the feet, but this could be just one of those opportunities where Usman is just like a reliable dog and maybe he's become a bit underrated in a sense. I mean, he is the Ultimate Fighter champion and this might be a big night for Ultimate Fighter, so we'll see. All right, Igor Severino versus Andre Lima. Oh man, it is extremely tough to get a read on this fight. So both of these guys are emerging from the Contender Series. Lima is 25 and Igor is 20. So this is interesting. You know, at times it's good to be the younger fighter, but is 22 young? Does it mean he's too experienced? Maybe a little too erratic? What I saw from Lima in his debut was nothing like fantastic. I think I see more from Severino just in terms of his aggressive shootbox style. He trains out of a good camp. I mean, shootbox is it's a notorious camp. He's really aggressive. His grappling seems up to par. Andre Lima, I mean, he's this massive favorite. I think it's because he's supposedly like this fantastic kickboxer from Latin America, but I mean, I don't know. Besides his length and his range, I didn't really see anything too special. So I think Severino's definitely worth a dog shot here. I mean, in taping this card, I can see a lot of underdogs hitting. I would not be surprised at all. We've seen it happen a lot on these Apex cards. So maybe I'm missing something here. You're just going to get long, long point fighting from Andre Lima, whereas Severino's actually going to push the pace in a smaller cage. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this one, but kind of do like the dog shot on Severino. Don't like the finish on either side, you know? So maybe if it does go to the judges' scorecards, which I think it will, it'd be easy to side with the dog. It would also be easy to just side with any overs that are found. Maybe I'm misreading this completely. Maybe it would be better to just trust the sports books with this one. But man, I don't know. I see an opportunity for Severino here. Okay, the undefeated Montserrat Rendon versus Daria Zelizinyakova. Hopefully I said that right. Man, Daria is one of the most aggressive fighters I've ever seen, just man or woman. I mean, this chick comes and brings it, and she goes in there to kill. So it's going to be interesting to see how Montserrat handles that. She handled a pretty strong girl in tomorrow's Vidal, but Vidal was kind of a fraud regardless. Had some power, but Daria actually has some very like crisp fundamental striking, and she's willing to engage. I don't think she's going to be afraid to strike really like Tamara's was. Montserrat's also 35. So if Daria, what happens with Daria is she usually pushes the pace and finishes girls. Her only loss is to Melissa Dixon or whatever Melissa changed her name to. But I mean, Dixon's an undefeated wrestler who was an extremely hyped prospect and was honestly getting butchered on the feet, and then turned it around, was able to get Zelenikova out of there, but used her I know I said her name wrong, but it's just too long. But yeah, she used her grappling to get her out of there, and I don't know if Montserrat has that. She's a pure striker, so I don't see her knocking Daria out. Even if Daria gasses, I think that Daria will even be able to rely on wrestling to kind of nullify Montserrat, because Montserrat, big girl, undefeated girl, but also 35 years old, also has shown to slow down and fight somewhat. So I think if Daria pushes the pace, just being 7 years younger, and my God, Daria has some incredibly crisp striking. She just puts it all out there. And if Montserrat survives and finishes her, I mean, honestly, the best way to bet this would be to bet Daria, parlay her maybe, and then you take Montserrat, and you can live bet her because she's going to get absolutely butchered in the first round. So if she survives, so be it. And if not, you can play Daria by finish, And I think that Montserrat, you can get an insane number on her in the second round. You might as well just throw some cash on her, because if she wins, it'd be some good cash either way. So that's one to definitely live bet. Like last week, Dolgarian C-Rod was the live bet fight. This might be the one too. Steven Nguyen versus Jarno Ahrens. I do like Daria to finish, though, just reverting back to that. So maybe not the best hedge, but who knows? Who knows? 35 years old, I think that's the one thing that's edging me towards Daria, because that type of damage, I don't know. Anyway, Steven Nguyen versus Jarno Ahrens. Yeah, you know, Nguyen's coming off like that slick knockout of AJ Cunningham, but besides that, what has made him this massive favorite against Jarno Ahrens, who at this point has cage experience versus some solidified guys? I mean, William Gomez is not the worst fighter in the world. He's a long, lanky, awkward striker who also has some solid grappling fundamentals. And I mean, Sungwoo Choi is an absolute veteran. And Ahrens had a lot of moments in that fight. It was just in Korea. It was a home fight for him. And they throw in Ahrens in there, like with guys who are at home where the judges are just completely dissuaded on anything he really does. So it'll be an interesting fight here on neutral ground. You know, Steven Nguyen, he's a solid fighter, Fortis fighter, but I mean, I don't know. I saw a lot of things I liked from Ahrens, and there's no reason that Jarno should be like this big of an underdog. He's absolutely worth a dog shot. So I'm going to take him just to be edgy, you know, why not? So we'll see. I did say dogs are barking, and I've only taken two. So, you know, got to be true to my word. Okay. Miles Johns versus Cody Gibson. I guess this is the... Is this top of the prelims or no? No, no, not even close. Okay, this is like middle, almost middle of the card. But man, Cody Gibson is a dog, and his pace is just unbelievable. Miles Johns, solid fighter, kind of an inconsistent guy, trades wins and losses most of his UFC career. Solid win against Argueta, but I'm just wondering what level Argueta even is, because he's been exposed a few times now, and I'm just not so sure Argueta was the guy I thought he was. Ronnie Lawrence definitely was. So what are those wins, really? Cody Gibson, he's a little long in the tooth now, but the guy is an absolute dog. And the Brad Katona fight was just so fun to watch. Unbelievable pace on Cody Gibson. There's always been a slick pace on him. He's really like... You know, the thing with veterans and journeymen, they are just so hard to read. You just don't know. You know, he took some tough losses in his first UFC stint. Honestly, he really couldn't even find wins. Like, he got the Johnny Bedford win, and even that had controversy behind it. So Cody just had a string of bad luck. But in his return on the Ultimate Fighter House, I mean, he looked really good. And against Katona, I thought he looked really good. I mean, he hurt Katona a bunch of times. I mean, he took Katona, like, he made Katona step it up to another level. And Katona is a solid fighter. So Katona is like a prototypical wrestler / boxer, kind of like Miles Johns is. Cody Gibson has alarmingly similar stats to John Castaneda, who was able to get rid of Johns in the third. And it's crazy because I just feel like Cody's durability and his pace is just going to be a little too much for Miles. And he's only a slight dog here, which is really unique to me. So I think I'm feeling that Cody Gibson play. I mean, in the Apex, it's going to be a barn burner. We've seen Miles Johns melt before. Miles Johns has some submissions, but I don't see him submitting Cody like in the first round. And man, if Cody just, you know, if he's giving him round after round to just reset and land like nearly double his strikes, then it's gonna be wild. And I think Cody can really outland this guy like by a lot. I think that Miles struggles with pace, and he's definitely gonna be using his wrestling here, so just gonna gas him out even faster. And I think Cody can do big things here, and he's actually stopped a lot of guys by TKO. You know, obviously there's been fights where he's looked a mess. Ray Borg was able to wrestle him and whatnot. But Man, I even think that Ray Borg might even have like a better gas sync than Miles Johns, oddly enough, just because we've never seen Ray Borg break, really. You know, he tapped to DJ a good bit into that fight, but besides that, tough, durable guy, Ray Borg even beat the hell out of Ricky Simon on the feet. So he's a higher level than Johns, in my personal opinion. I just think Johns might break here, so I'll take Cody by TKO. Ricardo Hamosh versus Julian Arosa at 145. Hamosh, really unreliable guy as well. Juicy J, really unreliable as well. The thing here is Arosa's been knocked out so many times, almost, I don't know, well over five, six times. I mean, more than that. So, been finished a ton of times. And he had never been finished. He'd never been knocked down, stopped by strikes like twice in a row before, but now he has. So, not a good look at all. Even Padilla, who showed himself to not really be maybe the class we thought he was against Kyle Nelson, he stopped him. It's not a good look to get stopped by Alex Caceres either. He's getting stopped by guys who aren't really known to have power at all. Sungwoo Choi, even Arce stopped him, and Devontae Smith. He has some wins and some strange split wins. I mean, he has some good wins that aged well, Sean Woodson and Nate Landwehr, but in retrospect, those are probably just like the experience gap, you know, just being an extremely experienced veteran versus guys who, you know, maybe just didn't have the most pop and yeah, you just outpace them. I don't know, but it seems like he's on like a knockout loss streak, and I think Hamosh, he's knocked guys out in the first round before. Even Danny Chavez, not a terrible fighter, you know, he stopped him. Hamosh, obviously extremely unreliable. We've seen him stopped before too. Charles Jourdain guillotining him was a bad look, but you know, what can you do? What can you do? It's just a style matchup, so I think the weight cuts get to Hamosh, but what can you say? Eros is just on this knockout loss streak. That's just, I can't really overlook that. So I'm not going to overlook that. And I'm going to take Hamosh by first round knockout, honestly. Trey Ogden versus Kurt Hollibaugh. Interesting fight. You know, I thought Trey got completely robbed against Nicholas Motta, which just sucked because, I mean, took him in that fight as an underdog, as a lot of people did, and it just didn't make sense what happened in that fight. And just Will on his way to a dominant victory, but is what it is. And I mean, it seems like something's up with Trey though. Like he doesn't have a lot of volume. He doesn't, you know, he's not really a finisher. Even when guys are on the brink, he just finds it hard to finish the fight. Kurt Hollibaugh, he's an extremely aggressive dual threat on the feet, on the ground. He's not such a great boxer or kickboxer or anything, but I mean, he's aggressive. He can land big shots. He's unafraid to get hit. We've seen him take tough losses. I mean, the Burgos loss was extremely strange because, I mean, he is a solid grappler. I don't know. Trey Ogden is a big guy, but Hollibaugh's not a small guy himself. Trey Ogden definitely has some height. But Kurt Hollibaugh is 5'11", 73-inch reach. He is 37, but, you know, it's fine. I guess he's going to be the same height as Trey, but for some reason, I just feel like Trey will be the taller guy out there. Trey's not so young himself. He's 34, you know. The guy is trading wins and losses right now, but what does that really matter? Doesn't. That's the thing. I mean, Trey has shown a lot of improvements lately, but I mean, he's a guy who's also been submitted a ton of times. Got submitted twice by Thomas Gifford. I mean, my God. I feel like Hollibaugh definitely pushes a pace that Ogden's not used to. We've seen Bahamondes exposed a few times now, so the level of these lightweights, these low level lightweights, you know. It's there's no way to really solidify where they're at. So, Kurt Hollibaugh coming in at solid dog money here. making a run since the Ultimate Fighter and showing a slick submission game. I think Austin Hubbard would give Trey Ogden a run for his money, to be honest with you. So I think I'll take Hall About Dog Odds here. Dude is solid. You know, I think he hits harder than Trey. I think he's got a better submission game than Trey. And I think Trey Ogden is as good of a grappler as he's shown to be lately. I still think he's probably got a weakness to guys who are just aggressively pushing for submissions, good off their back, guys he might not be able to hold down. And, you know, Mata was at the end of his rope, and Bahamondes just, I mean, even Bahamondes against Lucas Ludovic Klein, not a great look, just for that level of lightweight, as I mentioned previously. So Holabau's worth a look. Obviously, I have my doubts. He's 37, but I mean, I just think this is a good spot. And yeah, Cody Gibson, Kurt Holabau, both Ultimate Fighter guys. Don't mind them at all. Both a dog odd. So that's nice. That's nice. Luis Paulo versus Fernando Padilla. Yeah, so some guys I see are taking Paulo. I don't mind it. You know, I'm not too impressed with Padilla. He does have two fights now in the UFC. He went to decision in one of them as well. Man, it's just a lot of experience compared to Paulo, who's just like walking in here. He's really only fought cans. I wasn't super impressed with his fight style. I don't know. Paulo wasn't anything like that stood out to me in some incredible way, where I was like, oh yeah, he's definitely worth the dog shot here. No, I think I like Padilla, who also has a massive reach advantage here. Padilla obviously has a size advantage on most guys in the division. But I mean, it's a 76 inch reach compared to Paulo, who has a 69.5 inch reach. So, you know, 7-8 inches of reach, it's a lot of reach. So I think Poilo's gonna struggle with that. I've seen him get hit in his fights before a lot, so if Padilla is just lighting him up at range, it's gonna be hard for Poilo, especially in his debut. So yeah, I'm gonna rock with Padilla probably by decision here. You never know though. I mean, if Poilo does get exposed as someone who shouldn't be UFC level, Padilla could get the finish, but I still do think it's gonna take a lot of strikes to get there and a lot of a good amount of time to get there. So yeah. All right. Billy Quarantillo, he's fighting Yusuf Zalal. Zalal is taking this fight on short notice. This is very strange. Zalal's taking the fight on short notice after literally fighting in like some league I've never heard of. And he literally just beat a guy who was 0-0. Just made no sense. I guess he fought a few guys in a tournament in one night. But my God, Yusuf, that, like, what is that? That's not helping you prepare for guys who are UFC level. And Billy Q, you can say what you want about him, but at least, you know, he's consistent in his own way. He's definitely inconsistent in his career, but he's consistent against a certain level of guy. I don't think that Zalal has the firepower to, like, put Quarantillo out. I mean, he might if you think that Billy Q is just at a point where maybe guys can just hurt him and keep him off of him easily, fine. But I do think that Billy Q is a guy who can definitely push the pace on Zalal. I don't think the pace is even, I don't think you can even compare them. I mean, Zalal just completely takes his time with everything. And Billy Q is always looking to, honestly, he's always looking to finish the fight. Even if it's a bit sloppy, I feel like even in the clinch, Billy Q can definitely outwork Zalal, because Zalal is just a guy who kind of lets time go by, and he'll let a takedown go, and he'll let guys control him. And that's why he does have so many, like, that's why his, it's so many decisions, because he just lets fights go. Like, I feel like there's even moments where Zalal could do more. He probably could be a finisher because he's finishing guys outside the UFC, but man, he doesn't have a single finish. And I mean, the Blackshear fight felt a little strange. And I feel like Billy Q definitely can push that pace on the ground too. So we'll see. It's an interesting one. If Billy Q looks completely washed, then Zalal might be able to just like reverse his takedowns, get a ton of control time, land some big knees, and we'll have to see about that one. Okay. Peyton Talbot versus Cameron Sayman. Saman, a lot of UFC experience right now, and you got to think his only loss is to a guy who missed weight, you know, C-Rod, and a guy who is emerging as a serious talent here. I mean, I don't think C-Rod won against Ulgarian, but I mean the effort he showed, the guy is so durable, and the guy is just relentless, and C-Rod is just an animal. So losing him, no shame in that. Cameron Saman did well. I mean, he did really well on the feet in moments, and there is something about Saman where he is young and a bit green at times, and it does look like he gets hit and hurt a bit too much. But I don't know. Peyton Talbot didn't impress me at all in that Aguirre fight. It looked like he was just kind of okay reversing and scrambling and just ending up on top and just hitting a guy in top control as opposed to kind of showing off the striking he had previously. So it'll be interesting if this one stays on the feet. I think both guys have some striking chops, but I don't know. I feel like Cameron is probably the better grappler here, and he might even be the better striker. I don't know what to make of Peyton. He's going to have to show me something here, but I don't think Cameron should be the underdog here. It doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, he had one loss against a guy who's emerging as one of the top talents in the UFC, honestly. Whether you thought he won or lost, I mean, C-Rod's, he's taken some undefeated fighters' O's, and that's impressive alone, so got to rock with Saman here. I mean, he's just got so much more experience at this point, and we've seen him do well on the feet. He's going to match the size and the length of Peyton, so it'll be interesting to see Peyton dealing with that. It just was a very strange fight from Tal, but I can't take him based on that performance. It just was very strange. He was too content keeping it in places where he probably shouldn't have. I just wasn't really impressed with the IQ. Of course, Simon's defense is leaky and his IQ at times can be shaky, but I mean the experience is just something that's there, and he's going to improve vastly with each fight, so we'll have to see. But I'll take the underdog there in Cameron Saman. Edmund Shabazian versus AJ Dobson. Man, Dobson taking this fight on short notice. He lost to Petrosian, he lost to Malkoon, beat Inchukwi. You know, it's not really about who he's beat or lost to. It's about where is Edmund at? And it's like the only win that Edmund has gotten in the past, geez, 4 to 5 years now is Dolce Lungiambula, who legitimately is 36. And this is an extremely tough fight to gauge. And in all honesty, I think I have to go with Dobson here. It might be a mistake, you know, it might be an absolute mistake, but It's tough. And I mean, Edmund is a big favorite here for obvious reasons. It's just the level he's fought. And even his losses are just all against good guys. But it's like, at what point do we stop considering that? We're just kind of like, we have to base it on the fighter himself, you know? If Edmund doesn't gas out in a round or two in this fight and it goes to decision, so be it. But I could see this fight ending up a ton of ways. I could see Edmund even winning the first round extremely dominantly, and I can see AJ even winning the last round extremely dominantly, maybe even getting a finish, because I mean, we've seen AJ force the wrestling. Not a terrible wrestler. And all Edmund seems to do now is gas, and if he's not gassing, like when he knocked out Dolce, all he really did was like he just picked his shots and just was so low volume because he didn't want to gas out. So don't trust Edmund's gas tank at all. Extremely shaky. So I'm going to take AJ there. All right. And then Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa. Taffa taking this fight on short notice. I got to admit, though, if Taffa knocked out Carl Williams, I would not be extremely surprised. The performance against Chase Sherman was just abysmal. Like, I don't know how he went from looking like a supreme talent versus Breschke to legitimately getting destroyed by, not destroyed, but I mean, in moments, he really was getting beat up by Chase Sherman. I mean, it was embarrassing. I feel like Carl did more damage in that fight, and he did rightfully win that fight. But I mean, the amount of damage Chase was able to do, and he had him running away, I mean, it was just completely embarrassing. And didn't like that performance at all. But I mean, Toffa's taking this fight on short notice. I think the takedowns will be there much more easily for Carl in this one. As strange as that sounds, I mean, Chase isn't necessarily like a hard guy to take down, but Toffa just, I don't think Toffa's going to offer much resistance in the clinch or anything like that. And it is short notice, so don't know what's up with that. Very strange what they did there, the Toffa bros. But yeah, I'm not too into the matchup for Toffa. But again, it is heavyweight. I can see Carl even dominating two rounds and then just getting caught at the end, because the way he gassed against Sherman was wild. But in fairness to Sherman, you know, Sherman's got a crazy pace, whereas Toffa is just trying to lay one on you, and I'm not sure if that's the best thing to do against Carl, who can, you know, use that to kind of clinch. If you're just going to throw one shot at him, he's just going to dunk under and clinch, or maybe get a takedown off of it. And I don't know why this is the co-main event. That's gross. But this strange. But I'll go with Carl there. All right. Amanda Ribas versus Rose Namajunas. The return of Thug Rose. Awesome. Yeah. So Amanda, fantastic grappler, obviously world level grappling, her jiu-jitsu and wrestling all in one. Very good. Good takedowns. Rose also has good takedowns. Good off her back too. Amanda, probably the overall better wrestler. But in terms of sheer grappling, I mean, I can't see Rose like catching Amanda in a triangle or like getting her back and choking her out or anything like that. I can definitely see Rose touching her chin though. I mean, Hibas is one of the few girls who's actually very high level who does have just an extremely weak chin. And if she gets touched, she probably will go down. She gets dazed. Like when she gets hurt, she makes it extremely apparent. It's not a good thing against Rose, who is still a sniper. The Fiero fight was extremely close, and she broke bones in that fight. And I mean, people are talking about Rose's focus, but they've been talking about Rose's focus for the past few years now, and she looked great against Fiero, in my opinion. So not too worried about that. I think this is actually one of the worst matchups for Hibas, because I mean, Rose is just an animal when it comes to throwing hands, hiding her kicks. It's just the worst thing in the world for Amanda, who's going to be shooting as well. And Rose can also throw knees up the middle. I think people sleep on Rose's intelligence, but her fight intelligence is up there. She's got championship level IQ still. And I just think the kicks will be there. I think the crisp boxing is just going to be there for Rose. I honestly think she can end this fight in the first or second round if Amanda does have some luck, because she is in great shape training for a 5-round fight. I still think that Rose can find that knockout shot at some point. 5 rounds is just too long for Hibas to find things to do against Rose. Now, this might be a good one to lie about too, because if Rose comes out, you know, and she is a sizable favorite here, but the fight starts and you can just kind of tell that she just looks gaunt, or she just doesn't look herself or something like that. Once the fight starts, then man, just start hammering Hibas, because then I could definitely see a win there. But you know, if Rose looks herself, there's no reason she shouldn't be able to touch that chin. I mean, we've just seen it too many times. So that's just my take on this one. It should be a fun card, you know. Underdogs have been hitting in the main events lately, but this is just a woman's fight, and there's a clear level gap. So I do prefer, kind of capping and gauging fights like this, because I feel like it's much easier. I feel like Rose's level just kind of shines here. So we'll see. Good luck, everyone.